This is Wage World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me on the east side of town?
This is Wade Rathke, and you are listening to Wade's World. It's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30 Central Standard Time in the United States, and your time for the voice of the people. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, where KABF 88.3 is located, or the east side of New Orleans, where WAMF 90.3 is housed, or Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay, points east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at www.kbf.org. Podcasts will be available this show on Monday at that website. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to Jesse Waxman, organizer for Mighty Earth, based in Fayetteville, about a very important campaign they're involved in. Jesse, welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. I've been getting your emails. I also get an email from one of your compadres in Louisiana for our New Orleans station. So give us the background first. Mighty Earth, we're talking about Tyson, we're talking about meat, we're talking about pollution. We got the whole thing to go into. So start rolling.
All right. So Mighty Earth is an organization that was started by former Congressman Henry Waxman and focuses on reforming industrial agriculture. The environmental movement has focused on reforming a lot of sectors, but agriculture is something that needs a lot of attention. So Mighty Earth is really focusing their attentions there. The campaign that we're working on right now, called the Clean It Up Tyson campaign, is one that started just a few months ago, so it's really new, and is Mighty Earth's efforts to address the environmental impacts of industrial agriculture in the United States. So Mighty Earth conducted a supply chain analysis to look at the biggest causes of water pollution throughout the supply chain in agriculture. This was really inspired. They were looking a lot at issues of the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So this is right an area where nutrient pollution leads to an overabundance of algae, and when they die and decompose, they use up all the oxygen in the area.
Yeah, these dead zones we read about so many times in the Gulf Coast. This is part of what's coming from that, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We better be quick to point out, this is a national study y'all have done, but you're in Arkansas partly because it turns out one of the big hitters in this problem is our own Tyson's Foods, headquartered in Arkansas, isn't it?
Yes. So Mighty Earth conducted the supply chain analysis to see what companies have the biggest influence and are the most responsible, like in the industry, and are also the most responsible for causing and contributing to the practices that lead to this water pollution. And they found that Tyson Foods was the biggest. I mean, Tyson produces 1 out of every 5 pounds of meat raised in the United States, and they're also some of the biggest, or the biggest polluter in the industry as far as from agricultural runoff and nitrate pollution. So we wanted to address this issue, take a big stab at cleaning up water pollution from the meat industry, and if Tyson Foods can take the lead on changing that, we can have a big impact. And to be more specific, that would be we're asking them to make this commitment to buying sustainably grown animal feed. So this would be feed grown in ways that improve soil health and conserve natural lands and reduce water pollution, so things like growing cover crops, maintaining natural buffers around crop fields, minimizing tillage when you're like planting new crops, and all of these practices will really help keep the soil on the farms where they're supposed to be and keep pollution out of our waterways.
Well, and let's roll back there, because you make your report, which you shared with me, has some very interesting and sort of dramatic statistics about the size of Tyson, but among them is how much it takes in terms of harvesting grain and soybeans in order to feed all these animals beef and pork and chickens that Tyson and similar companies are involved in. I mean, I think one thing, one metaphor y'all use was something the size of New Jersey, millions of acres of grain. So it's all, this supply chain is not just a Walmart situation of warehouse to trucks to stores to consumer. This is from the earth on up. And a lot of what you talk about in your report is the problem of all this grain production, right?
Yeah. So when people think about pollution and water pollution from the meat industry, a lot of people tend to think about CAFOs, so these confined animal feed operations where you see pictures of animals living in very close quarters, and lots of animals when they live in close quarters produce a lot of waste. And that's very visually dramatic and has gotten a lot of attention and, you know, is something worth paying attention to because that does cause pollution. But we're actually seeing a lot more pollution coming from the way we grow crops to feed those animals. I mean, we have about a third of the continental U.S., like, land goes to either grazing or growing crops to feed those animals. So it's a huge amount of land that is being farmed in order to just feed this livestock. And when practices aren't being, like, best management practices aren't being used on these fields, so practices, like I said before, cover crops, natural buffers, you know, not applying more fertilizer, like, a lot of farms tend to over-apply fertilizer, right? So if your plants can't absorb all those nutrients, they just get washed away. So when we're looking at a land space that's, you know, a third of the size of the U.S., and we're seeing those practices being used or not being used, right, when we're not using the good practices, then, yes, that causes a huge amount of pollution, and all of that runs into our waterways and contaminates our drinking water and leads to things like the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, and there were some maps that obviously caught my eye, because if you look at the impact on the watershed in both Arkansas and Mississippi, that's huge, as the guy says up there. Arkansas must still be one of the leading areas where there are Tyson plants. Is that correct?
That's a really great question. I'm not sure what state actually has the most Tyson plants. They're pretty spread out. I mean, obviously in Northwest Arkansas, we have Tyson headquarters, and there are a lot of chicken plants, chicken farms around here. But they are pretty spread out throughout the heartland.
Well, and I know years ago there was a long effort led by the United Food and Commercial Workers to try to hold Tyson's feet to the fire in terms of how it worked its employees and paid them and whatever else. Tyson's a pretty difficult company to get to listen. So have you gotten, you and Mighty Earth, gotten any response from Tyson on any of the work you've been involved in?
We have. So we met with them before we started our campaign to let them know and give them the opportunity to take the lead before we launched. They weren't interested at the time. A few weeks ago, we launched our coalition letter nationally, so with over 200 businesses, organizations, religious groups, even labor groups having signed on. And Tyson, we did get a response out of Tyson, basically claiming that we weren't giving sufficient credit to some of the environmental work, environmental stewardship that they're already doing, and that it's not possible for one company to make a difference.
Work did they claim they were doing, Jesse?
You know, they didn't specify. I know they do give grants for they have grants available for people who do want to do sustainable agriculture work on a smaller scale and really are, like, they're aware of the practices that lead to cleaner, greener, more sustainable and regenerative agriculture. And if you look on their foundation, they have grants available to help farmers do that work.
But they don't insist that their suppliers follow those rules.
Exactly, which to me is really interesting. So, like, are they doing stuff? Yes, it's on a small scale, and what we really need to ramp it up, you know, they recognize that these are good practices. They should really be implementing them in their own supply chain.
We're talking to Jesse Waxman, who's an organizer for a group called Mighty Earth, about a coalition they've put together to try to get more accountability in the, what they're calling the meat industry, which is sort of like a thud kind of a term, but it also focuses on companies that have a huge footprint here in our listening area of Arkansas, Mississippi, and Louisiana, and that's Tyson Foods. Now, the problem with that, so Tyson says, okay, we'll do these little precious things, but basically, I mean, what we've seen in other big Arkansas companies like Walmart, et cetera, is sometimes they're forced to have to put their arms around their supply chain and make sure that it's either safer for labor conditions, as Walmart has had to do in terms of textiles from Bangladesh and Africa and elsewhere, or you know, in this case, we're talking about farmers, and it sounds like it would even help many farmers if they weren't having to spend too much money on fertilizer and were able to come back and not seeing some of the ravages to their own cropland from pollution and single source growth practices. Or is that just me dreaming?
No, I think that's correct. You know, right now, the way agriculture is done, I think there are two big problems. One, it's very input heavy, so right, buying a lot of fertilizer and really more fertilizer than you need. And part of why that happens is because intensive practices that are being used now are really degrading the soil. So in the last 150 years, we've lost half of the topsoil, which is all the rich, good, like nutrient-rich soil that's on the top of our land, and it's really given like fertility to where we want to grow a lot of these crops, and it's taken millennia to build up, and because of these intensive practices, we've lost half of that in the last century and a half. So farmers are recognizing the need to institute better practices in order to keep soil on their farms, to keep their soils fertile, to keep pollution out of our waterways. So yes, this would be great for farmers because it would, these practices, you know, cover crops, help keep soil in the ground. They help keep pollution out of our waterways. But all of those things will really build up the soil health for farmers. So farmers won't need to, like, they'll preserve the longevity of their farms and won't have to, like, spend so much money buying inputs for additional synthetic fertilizers.
Now, have you, I'm asking a question, but I bet I know the answer. Y'all have had some interactions with farm groups, and what are they telling you?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure the extent to which we have networked with farm groups. We have spoken with farmers, and there is this recognized need for these practices. We're seeing actually a lot of farmers in Iowa, so Iowa has had some really severe pollution problems from agriculture. 65% of land in Iowa is for growing crops for livestock. So it's, you know, that's a huge part of the state. So farmers there, there have been a lot of problems. They recognize the need to institute these practices. So there are farmers who are on board and already doing these practices. We just need it to happen at a larger scale.
Well, and I noticed, and you're talking about nitrate damage again, that Arkansas was not far behind Iowa in terms of damage from nitrates, is it?
So there is an estimated, for nitrate pollution, in excess of 5 parts per million, about 1,200, nope, sorry, about 3,000 people in Arkansas have been affected by nitrate pollution at levels that is damaging to health. And sorry, the other one was Iowa. Iowa, I think, Iowa's much bigger. They're closer to 450,000 individuals affected by nitrate pollution. So Iowa has it pretty bad, but Arkansas by no means is exempt from the water pollution and associated health problems coming from agricultural runoff.
And certainly the point you made earlier about this runoff that goes into the Arkansas River, into the Mississippi River, down to the Gulf of Mexico, this has a long tail, these nitrate problems, and that's a huge issue throughout our entire food chain, isn't it? Not just the problem of what it takes to put beef on the plate, but also our fisheries, our ecosystems, our, you know, land and water connections that are so important for hurricane protection and climate change. All of this has an impact, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Right. So we were talking about the dead zone earlier. So we're seeing all of this nitrate and phosphorus coming off fields. So nitrate and phosphorus are two of the main ingredients in synthetic fertilizer, which is widely applied and overapplied on these seed crops. And all the excess stuff washes downstream into the Gulf of Mexico and creates this dead zone where no marine life can live. The area is completely devoid of oxygen. And so anything that can't swim out fast enough is going to suffocate. So we're seeing the fisheries struggling down in the Gulf of Mexico. There are areas, I mean, this year it was the largest on record, the size of New Jersey, where, you know, you can't fish. So fishermen and fisherwomen are having to go further and further out into the Gulf of Mexico in order to find schools of fish, which is challenging. And as I understand, the farther out you are, it's more dangerous.
Well, besides that, our fisheries are threatened all over the world and by various kinds of pollution. And, I mean, any report, I mean, the Mighty Earth could do a Mighty Sea report. They could have a partner organization, and I'm sure there are, in fact, lots of organizations that are dealing with this, you know, vast collapse of fishing stocks all over the world. But this is all part of the problem, isn't it, Jesse?
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously a complex system, what's leading to our fisheries collapse. There is stuff happening with overfishing. Changing ocean temperatures are affecting populations, but we are seeing a lot of dead zones, and this is all from mostly from agricultural pollution. So the Gulf of Mexico has one of the biggest in the world, but in the last few months, there have been reports of one, I think, off the coast of either Washington or Oregon that reached a record size, and the Chesapeake Bay also had a large dead zone this year as well. So it's not just the Gulf of Mexico. We're seeing this really, I mean, throughout the U.S., we see this also in the Great Lakes. We've had problems with algae blooms, which are like algae feed off of nutrients. So you get problems with that. They can sometimes be toxic, even in our Great Lakes. So this happens all over the U.S. And really all over the world. So it's not just unique to here, but this is where we are focusing our efforts right now, on really the heartland, because that's where we're seeing a lot of the heartland of the Midwest, because that's where we're seeing a lot of these a lot of this animal feed grown. And, you know, the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico was huge this year, the size of New Jersey, so we really want to address that issue.
Well, we don't want to kick New Jersey around, although we keep mentioning, you know, it's this amount of grain the size of New Jersey, and now it's you know, blooms and dead zones the size of New Jersey. I was just
New Jersey's just a very convenient size for comparing things, apparently.
Yeah, well, it's better better comparing to the size of New Jersey than the size of New York or someplace like that. But this is down home, too. Driving in southern Arkansas earlier this week, I went off the road at Dumas towards the Arkansas River and the Arkansas Post Memorial and National Park there, and they commented to me where you drive over a bridge there over the last number of years, you can't tell there's water anymore. There is such a large, hydrant and algae bloom across the water there that it all looks like land until you would step in it and, you know, of course, swim or drown. This is everywhere where we have agricultural production, and this is, but there's also, and I noticed an interesting thing in this report, we're all directly subsidizing this in a way perhaps we're not realizing. I mean, in the report quoted a figure that said the USDA tags a $2 billion price tag just on the cost for public water systems trying to clean the nitrates out so you can drink the flipping water. Wow. I mean, that's, I don't know if everybody realizes in these production areas that they're directly subsidizing Tyson and similar companies to pollute and having to clean it up so that we can drink the water. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of hidden, like, behind-the-scenes subsidies that help these companies kind of get away with the externalities of their production. So we are seeing, you know, it is really expensive to remove nitrate pollution from our drinking water. And because, these pollutants wash off into our streams, and if you aren't protecting a reservoir well or a stream, that gets into the waterways and you need to fix it or address it and remove them to the best that you're able because it's damaging to health. The problem that we're seeing, though, is, you know, there's nitrate pollution in the water and there's organic matter, so manure or other soil contaminants. And when the most common chemical used to treat and decontaminate drinking water is chlorine, but chlorine can interact with organic material and lead to, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly.
Nobody will ever know, Jesse. Just go and just jump on in.
All right, but I think it's pronounced trihalomethanes or TTHMs, and this is a carcinogenic chemical that can lead to cancer and reproductive problems. And we're seeing that created as a byproduct of treating water that's affected by agricultural runoff. So even when we are paying, you know, millions and millions to treat this, we're still ending up with problems. So what we really need to do is prevent that runoff from happening in the first place so that we don't end up with either TTHMs or nitrate pollution in our drinking water. And, you know, to circle back, the best ways to do that are instituting these best management practices by growing cover crops, maintaining natural buffers, not over-applying fertilizer. And to tie it back to our campaign, Tyson, just they're a huge company. They're responsible for buying a lot of these grains. And if they can make a commitment to buying and supporting grains, like farmers who grow grains in a way that use those practices to keep pollution out of our waterways and drinking water, then we can really make a big difference at reducing both contamination of our waterways and
absolutely
streams and our drinking water.
And TBH, to be honest, we're talking about something, if we're talking about cancer and reproduction problems, these are things that you don't want to have. We're talking to Jesse Waxman, who's an organizer for Mighty Earth, about a report they did on the meat industry, which is, if you're willing to read, is pretty shocking, and about that coalition they've been building to try to get some accountability from Tyson and others. 2 points before we go on to the recommendations. One is that if Tyson's doing 20% of the meat production and Walmart's coming up with almost 20% of their purchases, it looks like Walmart should be doing some pressing of their buddy neighbor Tyson to do right on this, shouldn't they?
Yeah, so, I mean,
we can agree on that.
we can definitely agree on that.
Yeah. So anybody who believes one of our favorite stores, Walmart, has got clean hands in this is wrong, because if they can start claiming they're doing XYZ on their logistical chain, that they're doing something on their sourcing, to not be on top of sourcing somebody they could almost yell across the street and talk to is just wrong. Look, this is going to surprise people, Jesse, but when you look at the recommendations, five recommendations for change in the report, none of them say stop eating meat. And that'll probably surprise some of the listeners. So this is not a vegetarians on parade here, go vegan. This is something about real accountability. So share with us for the next couple of minutes some of the items on these recommendations.
Sure. So the idea of our campaign is we don't think that, you know, we should have to trade good food for clean water, right? We should be able to have both those things. And the practices that we're asking Tyson to adopt and enforce throughout its supply chain really help clean up the water pollution problem that's coming from producing a lot of this meat. So like you said, there are five. The first would be raising meat using sustainably grown animal feed. So this would be implementing practices that help reduce soil erosion and reduce nutrient runoff. So things like growing cover crops in the winter, because a lot of farms will do a corn and soy rotation, and during the non-growing months just leave their fields empty. And without having roots in the ground, all of that soil just washes off the farmland. This would be minimizing till, so minimizing the amount that you really dig into the earth to turn it over before you plant, because that loosens up the soil and makes it more susceptible to eroding. And if you grow cover crops, it helps kind of loosen the soil so that you don't have to really plow through as much when you want to plant again. Protecting and maintaining natural buffers around fields. So these would be areas of natural lands that don't receive fertilizer application, so that when nutrients run off, there are plants there to absorb those and prevent them from going into waterways. A big one is using proper fertilizer application. So a lot of farms will over-apply fertilizer and apply in excess of what the crops they're growing can absorb. So you have all that extra excess stuff running off into our waterways.
And can't have that.
Don't over-apply. Sorry?
I said we can't have that.
Exactly.
No, so, and we need to diversify beyond corn and soy as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So one of the ways, there are a bunch of different cover crops that can be grown in the winter, but some of these are grains that animals can actually eat, so wheat and rye. So we want Tyson to, in addition to implementing these practices, create a market for growing these what we call third rotation crops, because then farmers can grow them in the winter and then have a buyer to sell them to.
We don't want to get too far into weeds. Let's give the top line on what people need to do for this campaign, because I don't want to lose the time before you have people join this coalition.
Great. So the other things we're asking really quickly are improving manure management, so figuring out better ways to deal with animal waste than just spraying it all over fields, enacting a moratorium against native ecosystem losses, and being more transparent on reporting how Tyson plans to make these changes.
So those five things, you can still eat what you need, but you might as well eat it without doing damage to other parts of the world and to yourself, frankly. And I think that's part of what you're talking about. Now,
exactly.
I promised I was going to ask you about GreenCore. I've worked with GreenCore over the years, big fan, done some training, had some volunteers in the past. Give people a minute on GreenCore, because I think they're involved in this as well, aren't they?
Yes. So GreenCore has partnered with Mighty Earth to place seven organizers throughout the heartland and Midwest to work on this campaign and organize the grassroots momentum. GreenCore is a year-long paid environmental organizer field training program. So it gives the next generation of environmental organizers the skills they need to be effective advocates for environmental causes.
And it's a great program. So if anybody wants to think about getting in the trenches and learning how to not just talk about the environment, but actually do the field organizing, it's worth looking at GreenCore as a potential place to do that work, particularly if you're younger and getting out of school and this, that, and the other. And I would have liked to talk to you about how you got from 516 area code, which I think is Long Island, down to Arkansas. But we've got only so much time, and I want to make sure you tell people how they can join this coalition and how they can get in touch with you and Mighty Earth.
Absolutely. So we are right now in seven cities throughout the heartland and Midwest, so Chicago, Des Moines, Kansas City, Omaha, Fayetteville, Dallas, and New Orleans. And we have organizers there working on these campaigns. If you look up the Clean It Up Tyson campaign in the respective city, you'll be able to find on Facebook the local initiatives that are happening. To find out more about the campaign, I would suggest people visit mightyearth.org/heartlanddestruction, and they'll be able to find copies of our report there. And we're always looking for people to get involved and to help out and have their voice heard. And some great ways to do that is to sign our petition online or even to make a call into Tyson headquarters and ask them to clean up their supply chain and commit to sustainably grown animal feed.
The name of the report you'll find is Mystery Meat 2, The Industry Behind a Quiet Destruction of the American Heartland. This is a report by Mighty Earth. Today we've been talking to Jesse Waxman, based in Fayetteville, who's an organizer for Mighty Earth, putting together this coalition to hold Tyson accountable. This station, KBF, is broadcast throughout Arkansas, so this is something we care about. Thank you for being with us, Jesse. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we have another guest, this is Wade Rathke for Wade's World. Thank you.